Today we're looking at what rest means to me. This is a series inspired by the word from the bishop and the start of the year where he told us to breathe. Have you been breathing? Hands up, have you been breathing? Ooh, guilty faces. I wonder how many of you today answered the question, how are you doing with, oh yeah, I'm good, bit busy. Or how's work going? Oh yeah, it's a bit busy at the moment. Or how was your weekend? Yeah, it was good, bit busy. Are we guilty of it? I'm guilty of it. I actually love being busy. So this is a hard but good talk for me to give. I love doing stuff. I get really stir crazy if I don't see someone for like 20 minutes. I'm like, oh, what am I doing with my day? So I never thought about the importance of rest until I went to a seminar on well-being that my old job put on, a secular job. And from that point on, I started to realize, oh, maybe it is a bad thing to be rushing around all the time. So then I started having baths all the time. Regular baths was like my saving grace. And then I went to a series of talks on rest a few years ago, and it has really changed my life, changed the way that I pursue rest. And I'm a long way off, but where I'm at now, and I'll talk a bit about it later, it's been a long journey and a process for me that I'm still on. But it's crucial because we are all busy, aren't we? We are all, hands up if you're busy. Yeah, turn to the person next to you, just tell them how tired they look. We live in a culture, don't we, of now, and we live in a culture of yesterday. We want everything straight away. We live in a world where you can get an Amazon drone to drop your parcel off, like, to your house. It's ridiculous. We've got Netflix. You get table service at Wetherspoons now. That's the world we live in. My old boss used to have an app where you could get someone to pick up your laundry and deliver it back to you washed and ironed within 24 hours, which is crazy. In my house, we don't need that. We've actually got a fairy who does it, a laundry fairy, which is incredible. I don't know if anyone else has got a laundry fairy, but I would recommend. It's dangerous, isn't it, the busyness that we live in. And I think we're in danger of burnout. We're in danger of exhaustion. We're in danger of leaving ourselves open to mental health issues with the way that we rush around and the way that we do lots and lots of things. And I think we're fickle if we think that our busyness doesn't carry a much deeper threat to us. Because we are often culpable for harmless overtime, for doing a colleague that little favor, to working a bit harder because it's a particularly busy period, to fitting that extra event in because when else am I going to do it? There's a great quote from Corrie ten Boom, which is, if the devil can't make you bad, he will make you busy. Which I think rings true. A lot of the times, if you think about things we regret, things that we're upset that we did, how often do those come in times of stress, of times of hurry, times of being busy? Now, I thought we were bad in this country, but it turns out Japan is a bit worse. And I was reading about busyness, and there's a word, there's a thing called karoshi, which was shocking that I read. And karoshi is a term used in Japan to describe when someone drops dead from overwork, literally drops dead there and then. So it's often from a heart attack or a stroke, which comes from a starvation diet, from chronic stress, sleep deprivation, and accumulative fatigue. And I want to say that you're more important than that. You're more important than karoshi. Your job is not that important. And I don't think that you might not be in danger of that, but I think it's a signpost, isn't it, to where we're at in 2019, that can actually be a thing, that there's actually a word to describe that is actually quite shocking. And I just want to speak into that culture of the cost of your busyness. So these are some quotes that I hear regularly, you know, oh, I can handle 6 hours of sleep. Or, you know, when I leave my work at the office when I leave at 10 p.m., you know, If I leave my family dinner at 2, I can meet the boys for the second half, and then I can catch those guys at the pub, make it to the dinner party, and then I can meet the boys back at the pub ready for a night out, and I can get to church at 8 o'clock the next day. The question is, what is the impact of your decisions that you're making? Of these small, little decisions, what is the impact? So we're going to look at the Bible. So if you want a Bible, you can put your hand up. It's going to be on the screens. We're looking at the Genesis story and what God says to us about rest. So we're going to read from Genesis 1, verse 31 to chapter 2, verse 3. If you would like to follow in a Bible. So Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. God saw all that he had made. So this is part of the creation story, of course. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. And by the seventh day, God had finished the work that he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now, I've got three quick points. If you didn't listen to what I just said, just to prove to you that you do need rest. So the first point from that passage is God rested. The second point is God rested. And the third point, if you still didn't get it, God rested. But it's funny that the number of people who don't think they need to rest, isn't it? So back to the original question, what rest means to me? So you've got literally 30 seconds with a person next to you. What does rest mean? Go. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, da 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 da. That's time. That is time. Hopefully, you've got a definition there. So I want to talk to you about more of a biblical definition and look at the words used in the passage we just read. So the word in Genesis 1 that we read there, rested, in the Hebrew is a word called menuah, not like manure. Menuah. I think, M-E-N-U-H-A, which can also be translated as a joyous response or to delight in. So it's a really interesting thing. And like that means like not sneaking in a power nap so that you can stay awake at church, or, you know, having a day off after 10 days so that you can do your assignments for your course that you do, or catching up on 2 weeks of washing up and making your packed lunches for the week. That's not what rested here means. Rested means to delight in. So in this context, God is saying that he delights in all that he has made for the 6 days. God saw what he had done was very good, and he rested. He had a joyous response to what he had done. So I want to use this as a base of what we're going to look at today. And we're going to try and understand what it means to rest in our work. So we're going to focus on our work, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about rest and the idea of Sabbath, which is in essence the heart of where rest comes from for us if you look at the Bible. Because we are in a culture where we're always trying to get more. There's a philosopher called Philo who talks about space and time, saying that our conquest as humans is to gain space, to acquire space and things, but that comes at the expense of time. And his argument is that we miss the very essence of life and existence, which is time. And we are spending that time to gain space. And that reflects in modern society, as a modern philosopher once said, "I can't get no satisfaction." So the question is, if we're resting, if we're delighting in what we have done, the question I have for you is, what are you doing? What do your 6 days before your Sabbath day look like? And that's the question I want all of you to think about as I'm talking to you this morning. So let's have a look at the idea of work. So let's look at what God says about work. So Genesis 1, 28, he makes man and he gives us a mandate. He says, God blessed them, that's us, and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So here God is blessing humans to work. He's saying, be fruitful, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule. These are the four things he's asking us to do. Now, there's a common misconception here where we think, we read this, be fruitful and multiply. We just think, okay, God wants us to have loads and loads of babies, get married and have babies. That's kind of what we're called to do. And that's maybe part of it. It wouldn't happen without that. But here God is saying so much more. Here God is saying to us that we need to create society. We need to create culture. He's saying that we need to be fruitful, increase in number, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule. He's given us a blank canvas, and he's saying, I want to partner with you as a human. I want you to fill the earth. I want you to draw all over this canvas with the creation and the creativeness of the being that I have made you to be. You are made in my image to create, and I want you to create. I want you to rule. I want you to use the uncut materials of this earth. Use the stone to build cities. Use the forest to build furniture. Use wind energy, like create civilization, create churches, create society, create family. That is our mandate. And the second part of our mandate, he talks about in Genesis 2, verse 15, which I've not got on the screens, where he says, the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it, and to take care of it. So this is the second part of our mandate, to work it and to take care of it. Now, this is interesting as well, because the word they're used to work it, is a word called abad. Can you say abad for me? Excellent. Very well done. Now, this word is cool because it means work. It's written as work in our Bibles. It also can be translated as service, which I think is really important. And when we think about the talk we had last week from Mike, our work is our service to God, our service to each other, our service to this earth. And that word abad is also used in the Bible on several other occasions as the word worship, which again is interesting because our work is therefore our service, but also our worship. On average, we're going to work 90,000 hours in our lives. Now, to think that the aim of our work is to work so hard that we can retire early and then just chill out and work less is missing, I think, what the Bible is telling us about what our work should be. And when we look at God's work, he says he saw what he had done and he saw that it was very good. He enjoyed his work. He reveled and rested in his work. Tim Keller defines work as rearranging the raw materials of God's creation in such a way that helps the world to flourish and the people to thrive. So my question for you is, are you fulfilling this mandate in your job? Are you fulfilling this mandate in your 6 days, including what you do outside of your paid work, your volunteering, your family life? What does it look like? Where do you serve? How do you spend that time? Now, just to be clear, I'm not here to give you an existential crisis. You're thinking, oh gosh, I don't do that in my job. But what I'm here to do is tell you that your existence is incredibly important. Because you are, believe it or not, the very best person for the job that God designed you to do. And we need you to pull together as part of your body, as part of the body of Christ. And if you don't do that and pursue those things, then you are selling us short. So my challenge to you today is to really think about what it is that you're doing. Do you live to work or do you work to live? Because we can't escape the fact that what we do strongly relates to who we are. So my story of work, I finished university, I did a sports degree, and I wanted to work for a charity doing sports things, like making football tournaments that would somehow save the world. I thought it was an option. Apparently, it's really hard to get that kind of job. So I gave up looking and looked at like recruitment jobs and sales jobs. I did like the idea. I'm quite competitive. And then a job fell on my lap that was perfect. It was a charity job, but it was a sales job. And I was selling a charity program to schools and to young people. And it really ticked all the boxes for me. I absolutely loved it. I would talk to my lawyer friends and my other friends who were like, oh, my job is so this and that. I'd be like, oh, I love my job. I get to speak to people, hang out, talk to young people. But over time, it got a little bit difficult, and I ended up in the mire of middle management, which is an awful place to be. Anyone in the mire of middle management? It's a frustrating place. Eventually, it's a long story, and I'd happily tell it to you afterwards, but I got called into the church by a series of dreams and pictures and people talking to me. And after a long journey, I ended up working here at St. Barnabas. January 2018, thank you very much. And I thought I loved my old job until about 3 weeks into this job, I was kind of walking to work and thinking, I'm getting paid today to have coffee with someone to plan a prayer meeting, to go to a prayer meeting, and then to go for a drink with someone after work. And I've just felt this whole journey has been incredible, to feel this sense of being alive, feel like God has really called me into this place, that I'm where he wants me to be. And just to walk in that, has, I didn't realize until I left my other job and started this job, what that really feels like and looks like, which is cool. And I don't want you to feel like you have to work for the church. There are so many jobs out there. Like if you're made and you're called to be an artist, then be an artist. Or if you're a chef or a landscape gardener or a lawyer, a doctor, video game tester, whatever it is, do that and pursue that. You know, what is it that makes you come alive? Because we are the fortunate people in the West where we have the freedom to explore what our dream job is. And there are millions and millions of people around the world who just don't have that luxury. And it would be a tragedy to not at least walk towards that and explore that, push those doors. So some questions for you to help identify what that is. And if you're sat here thinking, oh, I'm retired, it is not too late, this still applies to you. Questions are, what do you love? What are you passionate about? What are you willing to suffer for? What makes you angry in this world? What makes you sad? What makes you happy, energized? What keeps you up at night? What would you do if you didn't get paid for it and money didn't matter? What would you do if you knew after 20 years of doing it, you were going to fail? So I want to implore you to not rob us of your calling. And if you are in the position where you just have to do the job that you do, then how can you explore that calling outside of your paid work? So Pete Grant does a great job with an agency, but he also feels really strongly that God wants to use him to teach English to people, similar to Keith. And Pete does that in his spare time on a Sunday afternoon. He started an English cafe. So what could you do? So the question is, why is this so important and how does this relate to rest? Now, this relates to rest because the working days, the 6 days that we spend, are like a pilgrimage that lead us to the Sabbath. And our depth of experience when we rest is entirely proportionate to what we do and what we engage in during those other 6 days. And when we lack purpose in our work, we try to find purpose in our rest. But our rest is not for finding purpose. Our rest is for delighting in our content. That's what we're doing. So I want to talk to you about rest, Sabbath. Sabbath in 2019, what could it possibly look like? Luke, you have no idea what my life is like. This is actually a little bit offensive that you're telling me to take a whole day of rest. So we're going to look at Genesis chapter 2:3, which I read earlier. So by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now, this is significant because here, after God has created the heavens and the earth, God blesses the seventh day and he makes a day holy. He makes time holy. And this is important. If you think about other religions, God could have made a temple. He could have built a religious site. He could have chosen a mountain. But God chooses to make time holy. There's a great Jewish writer called Abraham Herschel who talks about the Sabbath as our great cathedrals of time, that we have this sanctuary that's built in to the cadence of creation. Made in the image of God, we work for 6 days and we rest for one day. And we have that sanctuary of time, the 24-hour window, where we can reboot, where we can refocus on God, and we can get back our soul. This is part of the art of being human. This is also the first time in the Bible that the word holy is used, and it is used here to describe the Sabbath. So a few rebuttals that you might have. Luke, this concept is outdated. It's not even a command in the New Testament. Well, you'd be wrong. It's not, you'd be right. It's not a command in the New Testament, but it is a command in the Ten Commandments, and it has the most airtime in the Ten Commandments. It's got the most lines, most words in all of the things that he describes. It is also rife. And in the New Testament, Jesus says famously, the Sabbath is made for man. And the second part, not man for the Sabbath. But the first part we need to focus on. Because we're not Pharisees. We're not building up loads of rules. In fact, we're the opposite. And instead of hearing the teaching of Jesus, that rebuke about the Sabbath not being for man, it's that man, the Sabbath is for man. I'm getting confused. It's important. And it's not, even if it's not a command, and even if you don't believe that carries through, it still stands as wisdom. There is no command in the Bible to sleep for 8 hours a night. There's no command to brush your teeth for two times a day. There's no command to judge a queue in the supermarket by how fast it's going, not by how long it is. But it's wisdom. So the second thing I want to say to you that you might be thinking is, Luke, this concept is impossible to follow in 2019. And I want to tell you that you're wrong. But I want to tell you that it's really, really hard. Like, it's really, really hard. And I know that I stand here in front of many parents of young children, and I appreciate that. I can't imagine how difficult that must be. But what I want to tell you now is that the Sabbath requires sacrifice. It is a discipline, and it is hard. And here's something that I want to share with you, which blew my mind, and still is blowing my mind, that you cannot, it is impossible, in fact, to add in a day of rest to your busy week without taking out a day that is busy. So let's say that again. It is impossible to add in a day of rest without taking out a day of being busy. You have to make sacrifices. So when I was preparing this talk, I was feeling very guilty. I deleted Instagram and Facebook off my phone. And since getting married, I've had to give up playing football on a Saturday, which is sad. I've done that since I was 4 years old. Saturday is football day. I really love it. It's really part of what I grew up doing and what I did up into my mid-20s. But I can't do it because there's not enough time. There's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough hours in the week. But Sabbath requires sacrifice, and it requires learning how to rest. And I would argue to you this morning that the Sabbath, following the Sabbath, is one of the most punk rock countercultural things you can do with your time. Because we don't do it and we don't see it. And it's not what it means to live in London. But let's look at Jesus as an example. He had 3 years to change the course of history, and he spent most of that time fishing. That's a massive waste of time. He was going off up mountains on his own and praying, being there, being a human being and not a human doing, to use that cliche. It is essential, and it's part of the rhythm that we are created in. Now, interestingly, the rhythm of working for 6 days and resting for one, people have tried to meddle with that and change that throughout history. The French tried to extend to a 10-day working week. The Soviets tried to extend their working week. And both systems just failed. People really suffered after not working and resting in that pattern. And I'm sure there are people sat here today who haven't had a day off for 10-plus days, and you are suffering. So what do you need to know about the Sabbath? Firstly, it's been done for literally thousands of years, and it's not that weird. So don't worry, don't panic. It's going to be okay. Secondly, the idea of Sabbath is to celebrate time and not space. Because it is the moments in our lives that lend significance to the things in our lives. It is not the things of our lives that lend significance to the moments in our lives. And it's really important that we constantly remind ourselves of that. With time, the goal is not to have, but to be. Not to own, but to give. Not to control, but to share. Not to subdue, but to be in accord. And the Sabbath is a day for healing. Interestingly, Jesus does most of his miracles on the Sabbath in the New Testament. When you read, he's often teaching on the Sabbath that I read. And I think that is indicative of the fact that it is a day that Jesus wants to heal us. So the challenge for you is to identify the things that make you busy and hurried, and the challenge is to destroy them, to put them in a blender and then pour them down the sink because you don't need them. Unless they're your children. Definitely don't do that, say your children. So what are the rules for the Sabbath, right? I heard that you can't turn light switches on and off on the Sabbath, etc. What does that mean for us today? And the important thing to remember, I think there are two really easy checkpoints, which is the basis of the Sabbath, and that's, is it worshipful and is it life-giving? Or if you're a Marie Kondo fan, does it spark joy? And you need to always ask yourself, is what I'm doing worshipful? Is what I'm doing life-giving? Is it both of those things? So some rules here that I heard, which I chose to try and follow and stick to. Do, things to do on the Sabbath. Do sleep in. Do relax. Do spend time in the scriptures and the Bible. Do pray. Do eat all day long, much as you want. Do enjoy nature. Go outside. Go for a walk. Enjoy the sunshine if it's sunny. And do spend time with friends. Spend time with family. Things to avoid, what not to do on the Sabbath. Don't buy or sell. It's not a time to have more, but a time to rest in what you have. Don't look at emails. Don't engage with social media. Don't do chores or run errands. Don't talk about heavy or sad or divisive subjects. Don't talk about work or things that you need to get done. Don't look or engage at magazines, articles, or the internet, things that are just going to want to make you want more. But again, the rules aren't for rules' sake. The Sabbath is made for man. You've got to make it work. But when you start, you will fail. You will miss one. You will book something in. It's going to be really difficult. But you will get there. It's a discipline. It's a work. It's a work, and it's hard. So I want to tell you what I do, what I've started trying to do the last couple of years. Bear in mind, I'm 25. I work for a church. I work on Sundays. I'm married. I don't have any kids. I like football. These are all things to consider because everyone's Sabbath will look different. But just to give you an idea, maybe give you some examples, maybe start to think about what you could try and do. So I have Mondays off. So after a Sunday, I'll crawl into bed after going to the pub with the 5 p.m. guys. Not because I'm drunk, because I'm tired. Disclaimer. And then I won't set an alarm. I'll turn my phone off and I'll put it in my drawer. All right, this is the goal. I barely actually do that, but I try to do that. And then I'll wake up naturally on a Monday morning. I'll get a cup of tea. I'll get my breakfast and I'll have a bath. I'll get my Lush bubble bath and I'll run it and it will be glorious. I will come out of the bath. I'll play my piano for as long as I like. And then I'll read the Bible. I'll catch up on all the Bible in a year that I've missed in the week. And then I'll make myself some lunch. I'll have some lunch and I'll often watch Match of the Day as I'm having lunch. And then I'll get a bit stir crazy in the flat that I haven't seen another human being for like 5 hours. So I'll walk up to the high road or to Finchley Central and I'll go to a coffee shop. I'll sit outside in the sun. I'll have a flat white and a big bit of carrot cake and I'll read a book. And then I'll just saunter back down. I'll have a look in the charity shops. I'll have a nosy in Waterstones and then I'll get home in time to see Hannah when she gets back from work. We'll hang out for a bit, and then I'll go off and play five-a-side football, score loads and loads of goals and win every week. I'll stay at football, have a drink with my friends, and then I'll come back home, have dinner with Hannah, and then I'll recreate all the goals that I scored for her in the front room, and I'll go to bed. So I'm a long way off, and I'm not able to Sabbath with Hannah at the moment, which is a shame and something I aspire to do. But that's a little bit about what rest means to me at the moment. Oh, I got a picture of a bath there. That's good. So now, as we close, and I'm going to invite Joe up as well, I'm going to read to you from this book called Garden City. Now, if you're interested in what I've had to say, this book really is the gold standard. If you haven't read it, I would thoroughly recommend it. Talks about everything I've just spoken about, basically. And it's just incredible. I'm going to read a section to you about what this guy does for Sabbath. And he has three kids. So hooray, you can hear it from someone who has three children who I think are like 12, 9, and 7 or something. And then we're going to respond. Is that all right? So you might want to close your eyes. You might want to just enjoy this. He speaks about it much more poetically than I just did. And this is the thing that really made me think, oh my gosh, I need to cancel all my plans and have a Sabbath. So the traditional time for a Sabbath would be Friday at sundown to Saturday sundown. That's when the Jewish tradition would do it. It's a 24-hour window. So this is what he does. Friday is the day of preparation, and we gear up, shop, plan, clean, finish up. like we're getting ready for a holiday. It's like having Christmas once a week. The last few hours of Friday afternoon are always a bit stressful, but mixed with so much anticipation. Right before Sabbath starts, I walk through my pre-Sabbath ritual. I go to my home office, I clear off my desk. I put away my to-do list, I power down my computer, I turn off my phone, and I put it in the cupboard. Then 20 minutes before sunset, we circle up in the living room as a family. We follow a few of the ancient Sabbath traditions. Tammy, which is his wife, and the kids light the candles of Sabbath. I pour the wine, grape juice for the kids, for the Kiddush, an ancient blessing. We read a psalm and we say a prayer. We invite the Spirit of Jesus to take us into a posture of rest and worship. And then we eat a lot. Dinner was made earlier in the day, so all we have to do is set it on the table and dig in. We take our time and we talk about the highlight of our week. We have friends and family over, and then we have seconds, and then we have dessert, and then we have more wine. It's so good. After dinner, we relax, we read, we sit by the fire in the winter, we go for a walk in the summer. And before I put the kids to bed, I read to them a story from the scriptures. Then Tammy and I usually spend some quality time together and go to bed early. We call it reverse sleeping in. My body is in a rhythm now. So by 9 p.m. on a Friday night, I'm heading to bed. There's no TV, there's nothing digital. The house is quiet and at peace. I am quiet and at peace. Saturday morning, I wake up whenever I want. And after I go to bed so early, I feel like a new man. After I greet my family in the morning, I make my coffee, good coffee, and I sit in my study and I read. I start in the Psalms and then I read Jesus in the New Testament. Then I go to the Old Testament and then some more of the New Testament. I take my time. I'm not in a rush. I think, I pray, I listen. And usually I'll read a chapter of Herschel's The Sabbath before I come out. When I'm done, I get my three kids on the sofa and we drink hot cocoa and read some more of the scriptures. Then we say a prayer and ask for God's grace over the day. I used to do some light exercise, but not anymore. I just rest. And after a shower, we put on some nice threads and we walk down for brunch. And we go to the donut store down on the corner and we order whatever we want. We eat our way through the Sabbath. And when it comes to a diet, anything goes. After brunch, we come home. The kids go for a nap. T usually goes on a bike ride to meet a friend for coffee. And I'll just take hours to get my introvert on. I'll read and journal, think about the week behind me, the week ahead, and then most of the afternoon is on the couch with a novel. Later, I'll play Lego with the kids, or we'll go to the park, or whatever sounds life-giving at the time. Then as the day winds down, we go on what my son Moses calls a praying walk. We just saunter around the neighborhood, and we thank God for the last 24 hours of peace. And by the time I'm walking back up the stairs to our house, I'm already looking forward to the next Sabbath. And every week as the day unfolds, something strange and mystic happens. Right around 9 or 10 in the morning, I get my soul back. What is that? Is it the Sabbath? Just the nurturing effect of sleep and downtime, good food and no to-do list? Or is it something more? Is it the Lord of the Sabbath? And the answer is yes, it's both. So Jesus said in the message in Matthew, are you tired, worn out, burnt out on religion? Come to me, get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Would you guys stand with me as we respond to this? Jesus is the embodiment of the Sabbath. He is the seventh day in flesh and blood, and we can come to him to find rest. Not just on the Sabbath, but all week long. People whose Sabbath live all 7 days differently. But the Sabbath isn't just a pause button. It's a full, complete, total system restart. We power down, we cool off, we let the fan wind down, and then we reboot. The Sabbath is a chance to take a long, hard look at our lives and to retune them to the right key, to make sure that our life is shaped around what really matters. And when we see stuff in our life that is out of whack, we can turn to Jesus, and he will come and do his healing Sabbath work. We get tired in body and in soul, and we need more than 24 hours armistice from work. We need an encounter with Jesus's healing power. Because the Sabbath is nothing more than a signpost pointing towards him and the future. So as we sing this last song, I want you to just rest in Jesus's healing power. Just invite him in. Jesus, I want to rest in you. Your ways are good. Your burden is light. Show me, Lord, what I need to get rid of. Show me how to walk with you in that. A deep breath in of his presence. Breathe out that stress.